This is The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcast. Welcome to Podcast 449. I'm at a place where many people are going to come at various times during this holiday season in America and Europe, places like that, and that's the airport. So I'm just walking into the airport here. I'm coming through the garage into this thing underneath the concourse, you know, downstairs where you go to the light rail and everything. Now, I've never done a podcast from the airport, so it's a little bit weird because I'm standing here with this microphone walking through, and of course, you know, immediately people start looking at you, and it's the whole TSA experience. But I think this is as good a time as any to kind of start this, get on the escalator and head down. So here's what I'm going to talk about in this podcast as I walk through Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport in podcast 449. So the presidential race is heating up, and the ranks of the candidates are beginning to consolidate. And I feel, with all the attention on the presidency, I feel like it's time to remind people it's only the presidency in podcast 449. So that guy's talking about the weather. And people are very excited because it's in the 30s. Because here in Minnesota, you come to this airport sometimes and it's 40 below zero outside. You come in and people are just jackets and everything else. And I have to mention, I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you went someplace like the airport or the mall or whatever, and you came home and you had a pipe burst or you had some kind of a heating problem, and immediately you're like, who do I call? Now, I got a cheat sheet here, so I brought the numbers with me, but you call Ryan Plumbing and Heating. So you have to think of this like one of those stickers that they put on your water heater when they check it at the beginning of the year. In Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771. Ryan Plumbing and Heating goes metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs, too, for four generations. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. So if you have an emergency with your business or your home, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol where they've always been. Because when it comes to keeping all of your systems up and running, plumbing and heating and so forth, especially these days at home or your business, when you have heating or plumbing problems or air conditioning problems, you want reliable service. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Four generations in St. Paul, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They go all over the metro. So, you know, I have my little example places, but Coon Rapids and Maple Grove and Inver Grove and Plymouth and St. Louis Park, wherever you are in the metro. It's not just Minneapolis and St. Paul. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So, this year at Christmas and New Year's, you'll probably get into a political conversation or two. I already have, with friends or neighbors. People come over for coffee or whatever, and you know it's an inevitable part of the discussion. You either talk about the Vikings, or you talk about, you know, God forbid, or you talk about politics, or both. And you're probably more likely to get into it with family members, but sometimes with neighbors as well. Sometimes it's a continuation of Thanksgiving discussions. I got to keep my voice down because people will turn around and look at me, and that freaks me out. And usually the conversation is, hey, who do you think is going to win the nomination? Or who do you think is going to win the presidency? By the way, I thought there'd be more people here tonight than there are. It's pretty quiet here at the airport, and it's only about 10 o'clock, which is kind of weird. I thought there'd be a lot more people out here. I expected when I came out here that it would be super busy. But it isn't. Anyway, you're going to be having lots of conversations with neighbors and friends. And as the presidential race starts to heat up, as we head toward the first vote in the nation cast for a, you know, presidential figure, which is really about delegates and the nomination, it's not necessarily voting for president. That's going to be in Iowa on Monday, February 1st, 2016. You're going to get a lot of attention paid to the presidency, which irritates me. And I'm going to tell you why in this podcast. Now, after February 1st, things are going to move pretty quickly. You know, think of February 1st as sort of that carousel alert going. That's when the carousel starts moving, February 1st. And then on February 9th, and I have a little piece of paper here with my numbers on it and, you know, this stuff. February 9th is an actual primary in New Hampshire where people actually vote on a ballot. Saturday, February 20th, the Nevada Democratic caucuses. The South Carolina Republican primary, the Washington State Republican caucuses, and then Saturday, February 27th, the South Carolina Democratic primary. So in South Carolina, when you hear on the news, South Carolina did this or that, you have a Democrat primary on the 27th, and you have a Republican primary on, I think, February 20th. And then we move to Super Tuesday, March 1st, where several states vote. Alabama, Arkansas, Colorado, Georgia, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, I think Virginia, and what's this here? Oh, the Wyoming Republican caucuses. You have a mix of caucuses and different caucus systems and primary votes. So you're going to see the media shift into high gear on Tuesday, March 1st. So by March 1st, we are going to have a considerably different presidential race than we do now. There will be, I didn't bring the list, but there's a whole bunch of other primaries up to March 21st and then going out to June. California is one of the last primaries. And at that point, I think we're going to know who the nominee will be, or we'll know whether there's going to be what they call a quote-unquote, here comes the luggage, brokered convention or whatever. And we have had a big, big, big buildup to this. A lot of debates. Coverage, discussion, tweets rather. I'm sorry. I sound like some old guy. I'm sorry. I'm talking too loud here, so I gotta cool down. People think I'm insane. It's pretty weird to come to the airport and stand around with a microphone because I don't want people to come up and ask me, excuse me, what I'm doing. So I end up having to do this. Anyway, these debates and coverage and everything has provoked all these conversations every time people get together about who they think is going to win. Let me walk over here. And yet, you have 435 House seats which are up for election. You have a third of the U.S. Senate up for election, right? And you have, I don't know how many, local and state elections and governorships, depending on the state. How many people in your group are asking, hey, who do you think is going to win the election for fill in the blank for the district in the federal Congress or the state representatives or senators or governors in your state if your governor is up for re-election. For me, you know, this has sort of begun to take on the feel of a coronation, and that irritates me. And that's when we get into this whole question of how many of you had discussions about Congress, about the state houses, about the governor's races? And people say, well, it's a presidential year. That's the big caveat. Well, you know, it's a presidential year, so that's the excuse. But yet, we've had an extraordinary media buildup to this year's presidential race. And it started almost as soon as the 2014 so-called off-year cycle ended. They gave it about a month and a half, and they launched right back into covering it like sports. And I don't think I've ever seen this much early coverage, which was exacerbated by so much coverage because the Republicans decided to have 140 debates with 643 candidates. That's a slight exaggeration, but you know what I mean. And you know, they call the congressional cycle an off-year cycle, and it's irritating that they call that an off-year cycle, and they call it that because it's not the presidency. And it provokes this question of do you think that the presidency was ever intended to be this powerful? Excuse me. So what I did was I made a few notes, and I'm gonna present my thoughts on this question of the executive in a government that is supposed to be balanced. So originally, political writers, if you could actually call them political writers of the time, thought that sovereignty, the sovereignty of a nation, resided in the king. This was the first idea, and that God chose the king, or the king derived powers from God himself. And then as time went on, you started to hear this. I got to lower my voice a little bit. You started to hear this idea that the aristocracy, the nobility, shared power with the king. Actually, the divine right of kings came as a counter to the idea that nobility had a role in the conduct of the government. And then, as time went on, people started to think that the sovereignty was in a parliament or commons or assembly, and that they represented the people, but the whole sovereignty of the country was in a monarchy that might even be divine right, but it was checked by the idea of a parliament. And maybe some of this is a little off base, but I think for the most part it's pretty right. And then as the courts developed, there was also some discussion about the courts being really, really key, but there was no real formality. And I'm speaking primarily of the British, but you saw this all over Europe. And then finally, as time went on, people came to the conclusion, political philosophers came to the conclusion that the sovereignty of a nation was the people itself. And that's kind of where we are today. So the idea of mixed or balanced government is something that has evolved over time. It's not something that was just hatched whole. We fought for it. You know, it was a hard fought victory to get to the point where the people.
Liquids, gels, and aerosols must be in a 3-ounce container or smaller. Containers must be placed in a 1-quart size,
I have to wait for this to be over with.
The bag must be removed from your carry-on and placed in a security bin for x-ray screening. Remember, 311 is the speed of screening process.
Are you done? Okay. Is the government done speaking to me, the voice of tyranny there? Anyway. I'm sorry, I digress. So the idea of mixed or balanced government has evolved over time, and we had to fight for it, right? But it's also true that some of the most successful republics of the 16th and 17th centuries didn't really have an executive power to speak of. I've just been reading about Venice, and it's very interesting. Venice, the city-state, was governed by a series of interlocking councils with a executive whose powers were limited by a great council of 480 members that were taken from patrician families, the aristocracy. And the Doge, I think that's how you pronounce it, couldn't do anything without the great council, and the great council couldn't do anything without the Doge. Also in Venice, there were a lot of different councils that were interlocking, and people rotated through the councils. Nobody, you know, functioned on the councils for a long time. Venice was very influential in the thinking of the British during the Revolution Civil War in Britain, as well as in the United States during the Revolution. Then we get to the United Provinces in the 17th century, the Netherlands, which had enormous influence on the U.S. founders, the Dutch. The Netherlands, the United Provinces, didn't have a king for quite some time for various reasons, but it was governed by something called the States General. This was an assembly of representatives appointed by the provinces, and they did have something called a stadtholder. And the stadtholder was supposed to, in theory, command the army and would have had more power than the heads of the provinces, but was checked by the States General. And for a long time, there was some confusion as to who was going to succeed one of the kings, and they didn't have a king for about 40 years. There was a guy who kind of administered things. I forgot his name. So then it comes, you know, Britain went through a whole revolution with Cromwell and everything else, and this whole question of check power and creating mixed government and Parliament fighting for power. And keep in mind, the individual vote was limited to, here again, the aristocracy. So after independence from Britain, we here in the United States experimented with something, you know, like a loose federation of states like the United Provinces, with really no central government and no central government head. And when we realized that wasn't going to work, and they started to write the U.S. Constitution that we know today, She's doing what I do every time I pick somebody up. I tell them to go all the way down to the end because you can't get a space out there. After independence from Britain and the Articles of Confederation, there was quite a debate in the Federalist and at the Constitutional Convention concerning a presidency. I'm going to move because this is pretty loud here. And at the time, as far as the presidency was concerned, the people who were creating this government thought that the presidency really should just be a ceremonial position. So there was that point of view. And then you had the point of view Alexander Hamilton was a big fan of, which was to appoint a president for life because it would be Washington. Or appoint a president for life like you would the Supreme Court justices, because the president was really going to be a ceremonial position. And then there were people that felt that some of the authority of government had to rest in an executive, but that its powers should be carefully checked. I guess the best way to explain it is that there was a philosophy that suggested that the sovereignty of the nation rested in three different branches of government. So this would have been the current thinking of the time. And if you notice, the vote in America was white landholders. So it was very similar to the Parliament and House of Commons in Britain. So the House of Lords was more like the Senate. And these are probably fairly correct assumptions, for lack of a better term. So the Constitution of the United States makes the president commander-in-chief. But Congress has the power to declare war, and the president has to report back to Congress regularly. And again, there's not enough time in this podcast with me walking around the airport talking into this microphone to get too involved in this discussion, especially since I'm here at Carousel Number 12 and drawing a lot of attention. Suffice it to say that the early American presidencies weren't as powerful as today's so-called imperial presidency. I did not drive the mobile podcast command unit out here to the airport tonight because I probably couldn't get it in the garage. So I wouldn't have been able to even get it into the parking area. But I do have to talk about the mobile podcast command unit, which I mentioned all those primary states and the caucuses. And I'm going to be heading out to all those really important early primary states, not going to the Northeast. I'm going Southeast. So I'm going to go to the Iowa caucuses, the presidential debate on January 28th in Des Moines. And then I'm heading through the Mid-South to South Carolina down to Florida. And I am accepting donations for diesel fuel, and I appreciate that. But let me tell you where Mobile Podcast Command came from. It came from xgovernmenttrucks.com. And xgovernmenttrucks.com is now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota. They're at 356 19th Street, or you can go to xgovernmenttrucks.com, and you can see the selection there. This is the largest, probably the largest dealer of ex-government fleet-maintained cars and trucks in the entire Midwest. So get your butt down to the ex-government trucks Mega Truck Center in Forest Lake. They've got dozens of the best brands, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more. Where was I? I got lost. Oh, so if you need a work truck, if you need a plow, if you need a van, if you need anything like that, you want to go to ex-government trucks because they've got them there. And here's the thing that makes ex-government trucks great. They have lenders for everybody at all credit levels. They can get you approved online fast so that you can shop for your truck or car or SUV. So again, work trucks, SUVs, vans, and more. And ex-government trucks features the 3-day peace of mind guarantee. This is very popular. You can buy with confidence because if there's a problem, if you don't want it or whatever happens, you can take it back. And they also take trades. Xgovernmenttrucks.com takes trades. Ed always wants me to emphasize that they pay the highest values every day without all the bull. Xgovernmenttrucks.com, 763-777-8782. That's 763-777-8782. Or check them out at xgovernmenttrucks.com. And no, I did not bring the bullhorn into the airport because I'd rather not be arrested tonight. So we're talking about the so-called imperial presidency and where it came from. And my sense is that the imperial presidency began its ascent with Abraham Lincoln, who was as close as we have ever come to a virtual dictator in this country during the American Civil War between 1860 and 1865. This imperial power, this dictatorship, kind of continued later on with the establishment of the Federal Reserve, whose officers are appointed by the president with approval from Congress. And I believe that the Federal Reserve has enormous power in the economy of the United States. Some people think it would be necessary if we got rid of it. Some people don't. But it's to me, it's a major extension of executive power, even though Congress decides whether or not people are going to be confirmed as the head of the Fed. The presidency itself began to be more and more powerful in the 1930s with the advent of the Great Depression, and people wanted something done, and they expected somebody to do something about it. And then, of course, World War II, and throughout the Cold War, the presidency grew and grew and grew in power and scope over the people. And then in the post-Cold War, it has continued to expand its powers as the government has become responsible for more and more areas of responsibility. You see the president essentially acting as the Secretary of State. You see the president as the symbol of the country. And if you go back to the 1930s, we had Social Security in the 1930s, so now you're getting a check from the government, and they're taking money out of your paycheck every month to give so that you will have a retirement plan from the federal government. We had the war in the 1940s that really predicated the need for a strong executive to essentially consolidate state power in industry and, you know, all that stuff with the war board and war bonds and everything else. The Cold War, then, after the war and the expansion of the defense establishment in the late 40s, throughout the 50s, we had the Great Society in the 1960s, we had the growth of Great Society urban and rural development in the 1970s, on to the addition of many more executive branch programs in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. And I hesitate to say this, but I mean, it wasn't just, you know, Democrats that did this stuff. It was Republicans. And the American people, since the 1930s, a lot of people say, well, America, you know, we don't like socialism. But we sort of have a sense, in a sense, it's not true socialism by definition, but it is much more of a collective, my brother's keeper kind of government than perhaps the founders may have imagined. And if you want to just look at it on a spectrum, we have leaned to the right at various times in our history, and we have leaned to the left at various times in our history. And I think we've been leaning to the left in terms of government programs and things of that nature since the 1930s in this country. So this whole situation that we're dealing with today, where you have a bloated government which is responsible for everything, and then you have a president sitting atop it who is responsible for running it and who has vast executive orders, has executive powers starting with Lincoln's executive orders, many of which were never rescinded, many of which have been challenged as abuse of power by both Republican and most recently Democrat presidents. So it's not a party-centered thing, this idea that the government is all-powerful. I think the founders would be horrified at the size and the cost of the United States federal government today. And I think they would be horrified by the power granted to the executive branch to execute law through the creation of policy initiatives and executive orders. They might even be horrified by the fact that we don't have a mixed legislature. A lot of times we have a big majority of one party over the other for long periods of time. They might regard all this as an imbalance, an anathema to an ancient system of balance, which they labored to put in place through a written constitution where you had an executive branch and a bicameral legislative branch, Supreme Courts, federal courts, and so forth. So it's two things really that we're dealing with that make the presidency bigger than life in our country today. First of all, it's the growth of the need for an executive to react in a dangerous world without waiting for Congress, the nuclear age. Second, it's the idea that the president has to execute faithfully the laws passed by Congress, which these days include all kinds of complicated legislative ideas like Obamacare, with all sorts of complicated departments, with equally complex rules of operation, and a compliant media only too happy to pin the sash of sovereignty on the president as a king who sits atop this vast organization called the executive branch. Then we have all these branches of the executive, the Defense Department, the Justice Department, the espionage and covert war apparatus, Homeland Security right here at the airport, social programs and departments like education and energy and so forth. So as the presidential race consolidates, and it's going to, candidates are going to drop out, and as people start to vote, campaigns are going to run out of money, they're going to shut down, the conventions are still ahead, and two main party candidates will emerge. And you will have smaller ancillary candidates, but most of the focus is going to be on the Republican and Democrat race. If you look at the Constitution, most of it has to do with the act of outlining the powers and responsibilities of the legislative branch, with many specific enumerated responsibilities for the House and Senate, and not so many enumerated powers for the presidency. So with so much interest and so much talk about the personalities associated with the candidates, I just feel some of this just needed to be said. And I'm going to say that what needs to be said sometimes, I think, is that we need to, because the media won't say it, we need to say it's just the presidency. It's just the presidency. So along those lines, here are some thought starters for to have a real conversation this holiday season. If you want to talk about politics at home as we head down the escalator, here are some thought starters for discussions about the person who will be president. And these are real questions that will really get an interesting discussion going. How much is one president actually able to get done in one term, do you think? What about two terms? And go back over time and think about what presidents actually do. And think about examples. Despite the fact that every 2.5 years, most of the media is focused on the presidential sweepstakes, and it's getting worse every cycle, do you think Congress has more power to impact the country in a 4-year period or the president? How? How many really bad presidents do you think that there have been? And I'll give you a hint. Examine the period between Jackson and Lincoln for some great examples of feckless leadership and poor execution of the office. And then, considering the march of time, and considering the idea that the nation is made up of much more than our government. It's made up of people. You know, our customs, our economy, and our culture are really a force of nature. Like a storm. And the culture and economy and personality of a country are actually influenced by people and their day-to-day, year-to-year, generation-to-generation attitudes. This is where we get this idea. I mean, if you have to think about a culture, that's really the sovereignty of the country, is this personality of the country. The best way to describe the generational attitudes is Star Wars versus The Godfather 40 years ago, or Gone with the Wind 60 years ago, or 70 years ago. That's that weird escalator sound when these little rubber things get caught and they make this noise. Anyway, so what we have now is we have a lot of people on both ends of the political spectrum these days, on television and not on television. And I'm not talking about candidates. I'm talking about commentators, and I'm talking about regular people shouting out things on Twitter or sending silly emails or making ridiculous comments and saying ridiculous things about what are, in fact, very complex issues. And most of what I hear people saying today really has no basis in any fact or history, but they say them anyway. And inherent in these comments is this imperative that we're going to elect one person who will be elected to, quote, fix it. And what's really funny is that both sides have mutually exclusive ideas about what needs to get fixed. And the president will succeed or fail. So here's the way it plays out. Somebody starts out fresh and new with great appeal, largely because of tremendous media coverage throughout the campaign and then election night, where and then in the run up when he or she is the president elect and they are waiting to take office, they start out fresh and new with great appeal and a lot of hope. Even former opponents will be kind to them during this period of time. And then after 4 or 8 years, this person who had such stature at the beginning of this office has been devolved into a fool, a demagogue, a traitor, a dictator, a despot, or something un-American and dark, and that this person threatens the very...
Please stand clear of the doors.
Oh, I'm going to get on this. I'm going to get on this train. Just want to let everybody. I'm going to get on the little tram. We're going to go down to the light rail station. Speaking of dictatorship, un-American, and that this president that was so great 4 years ago or 8 years ago threatens the very fiber of the nation. I remember people that didn't like Bush were shouted down at the beginning of his presidency, and then the people that were defending him were pretty silent. I'm going to step in here. There's just one lady down there at the end on the phone. Pretty silent at the end of his presidency. And the same thing is going to be true with Obama. So the President Obama started out, and if you didn't like Obama's policies or ideas, you were a horrible person. And now even Democrats complain about President Obama.
Doors are about to close. Please stand clear of the doors.
So the president leaves office and is forgotten. Even though everyone says they won't and it'll never end, they do leave office. And as we allow media coverage, time, and the struggles of office to turn the president's hair white or gray, cause his skin to sag, and when he's gone, we say good riddance. And I wonder if it's possible that our expectation as a people are too great for one individual. This is something people should be talking about. Is it possible that we, bidden by a corrupt and evil relationship between power-seeking bureaucrats and power-seeking and people who are politicians who want to stay in power, you know, the relationship between this group and the media, end up accepting the focus on the one at the expense of the focus on the body of government that has the most potential to do damage in this country, which is Congress. It was Congress that passed Obamacare, if you're against it. It was Congress that decided to invade Iraq at the behest of President Bush, but they resolutely decided that we were going to invade Iraq. You know, so the people who were against that, there were only a couple of votes against invading Iraq. There were only a couple of votes against Obamacare. Do you want a president who will reduce government power, clean up the tax code and replace it with a flat tax? It's just some of the rhetoric that I've heard. Fix inequality, fix the economy, destroy ISIS, keep the Muslims out. None of that is going to happen without Congress, really, and sometimes the courts. So you see, all of this just works together. And the fact is, we elect a president, we expect so much from the president. But it is just the presidency. And it's actually a good thing that it's just the presidency. We should be talking about making sure that Congress actually works to further reduce the powers of the presidency. We should elect leaders who pledge to reduce the powers of the presidency and Congress and reduce the powers of government, and not rescind executive orders with their own new executive orders, or, you know, fix programs in existence that shouldn't be in existence, or spend more money to stop spending money, or, you know, pledge to conduct wars and intervene in foreign lands at their discretion with some new, you know, foreign policy idea that's basically the old foreign policy idea that's dusted off, or fixing the economy by increasing the size and expense of government. And with all the talk about who's running, how many people this holiday season do you think are going to talk about organizing their precinct or block for the coming election and beyond to keep pressure on Congress and the state house to make sure they don't do things like force light rail down your throat or whatever it is that their agenda is? How many people are going to talk about exercising the people's sovereignty? Let me get on the escalator. To ensure our rights are protected by the federal government. You know? So we're going to be talking about Trump, or we're going to be talking about Clinton, or we're going to be talking about Bernie Sanders, we're going to be talking about Rand Paul or Ted Cruz, but really we need to be talking about these really fundamental issues with the size, scope, and power of our federal government. So with all of that, you can sort of see why I don't support anyone running for president. Because no matter who wins, they're going to face their own challenges and their own limitations, and they will face the challenge of generation and time and human development at home and abroad, as will Congress. Time is like a river or a mountain that you ski down the fall line. So significantly changing the movement this way or that, you have to take that into account. You can't just push a button and make things change. And Congress will have to do the same thing. So the thing is, success or failure in this depends on all three branches of government. But most importantly, I think it depends on us, and I think we ignore that. Now, if it bores you, you just want Trump or Clinton or someone to fix all of this. We just want someone to fix all this. Then I guess you would support and understand the wisdom of the founders who wrote a constitution which allowed electors who actually elect a president to choose anybody that they wanted, and a Senate to be appointed by state legislators and governors as a check of the aristocracy on people like us who are feckless ourselves. So when we talk about leadership, when we talk about wanting something done, that's something to think about. This is one of the reasons that some of the early political philosophers thought that you had to make sure that the aristocracy was represented in government as a check on the people. So if you're one of these people who just don't care and can't be bothered and just want someone to fix it, that's something to think about. And maybe those are some conversations to have this holiday season. I just think we're paying far too much attention to the presidency and not enough attention to the things that really matter in the long run. I think presidents are important, but I think Congress is really important. And I think the courts are really important. And I think state legislatures are really, really important. And governors are really important. And people aren't involved enough in that portion of our government. And the reason we have to be involved, people say, why do we have to be involved? People don't want to do that. Well, you know, but they also want the federal government to do all these things, which makes the federal government consistently more powerful, which makes the president more powerful. And at some point, it's just not going to work. Very quickly, you know, I hate to bring up Hitler or Mussolini, but I love all of these World War II in color shows on Netflix right now, and I've watched them all, and they all have different theories about these kinds of despots and fascist leaders and how they came to power and the reason for it. But the one takeaway that I have from watching all those shows is really when it comes to Mussolini, when it comes to the Japanese leaders, when it comes to Hitler, they came to power. They were given unlimited power, and it worked okay for a while, but as time went on, they made really bad decisions. And people say, well, Hitler was a madman. He was drunk with power. So was Mussolini. So were the Japanese leaders. They were drunk with power. There was no check on their authority. This is where we're headed in this country, is an emperor who will be able to do whatever they want to do, and it will lead us to folly. And we need to think about that as people. So thanks for listening to podcast 449, sponsored by X-Government Trucks. They are the new X-Government Trucks Mega Truck Center is open in Forest Lake, Minnesota. They got a lot of these really awesome trucks, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more. The train's starting to come, so I'm going to very quickly try to get through this. And they've got great ways to get you financed so that you can get what you need if you're in business or just trying to find a good SUV. And they still have the great X-Government cars, the Crown Vicks, the Dodge Chargers, and so forth. And thanks, Ed, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. X-Government Trucks in Forest Lake at 356 19th Street. Let me remind you of the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast. For those of you that are pilots, the people that want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, speaking of which, the train is coming in. Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com page. And of course, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. If you have a plumbing emergency, I'm just going to tell you, this is the main focus right now because, you know, it's going to get cold. And we've had a warm winter so far, which means you can have problems lurking in your plumbing or your heating system, because they're really not working hard yet, but they will. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for emergency service metro-wide. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They are metro-wide, which means they go to the suburbs too. And thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. We're on Google Play, blogtalkradio.com. And don't forget the GCN, Genesis Communications Network, syndicated radio show. It's called the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. And you can listen to it at GCNlive.com. And thanks, you guys, for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command. Getting ready to head down to cover the caucuses and the Mid-South for Super Tuesday, then on down to the Florida Keys, all the way up through the Redneck Riviera, including Louisiana, New Orleans, Texas, back up to the Twin Cities at some point, and going to political events all along the way, as well as just regular old life stuff. I'm really, really, really getting antsy and super looking forward to it. So thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter, and for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. I'm also on Instagram at bdavis7843. I'm talking about Periscope. We'll see what I decide to do. And thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts.